Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Too Niche.
I'm Lara.
And I'm Elizabeth. Today, we're hauling something scandalous.
In case you've been hiding under a rock or don't live in Los Angeles or aren't on TikTok, a scandal has rocked LA within an inch of its life. I'm talking about the Horses restaurant drama. And Elizabeth and I were texting about it, and we decided we need to haul restaurant scandals. There's actually like a lot of drama that happens in restaurants.
And some of it is salacious. Some of it is juicy. Some of it is mundane. Some of it shifts laws. Like we've got it's a real mixed bag of the levels of drama that we're getting into today. And I like that.
Me too. And it spans not only high end, but also lower end. So I appreciate that just as like, I love a high-low mix.
Yeah, I think we should start with just like shedding some light on the current Horses drama. If I know you guys covered it on Sup beautifully, might I add.
Thank you.
Since then, we have had another article come out from New York Mag online with Grub Street really shedding some more light on the current situation. So we'll start there.
Yeah, let's start there.
Most recent.
It's a great jumping off point.
Though, before we get into it, I just want to kind of like touch on how we're going to be grading said haul today. First and foremost, it's like how much has it penetrated the zeitgeist? Has it stayed local? Has it made national?
Yeah, I think my grading is like how salacious is this? And the more salacious it is, the higher the grade for me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. That I'm with you. But also, has it gotten like a streaming content piece?
Yeah, that's something to think about as well.
And then was it light and fun to talk about or was it deep and dark?
Yeah, since I gravitate towards like black holes of drama and darkness, that jacks up my rating process. But I'm open to your rating process being a little bit different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're coming from two sides of the coin, perhaps, mm-hmm. but we're both equally as invested in the drums.
Yeah. So should we jump into Horses first?
We absolutely should. Yeah.
Okay. So Horses is a restaurant in Los Angeles. It used to be kind of like a British pub called The Pikey.
The Pikey.
For a long time. It was like a spot where you could go. I feel like it was like if you're in your 20s or 30s, like you go there, you have drinks with friends or you could have dinner. It was like mid price to like semi-high price sometimes.
I always felt like the Pikey was a great starting off point for the night.
Yeah. It's central-ish like to Hollywood and like West Hollywood, not too far. And it was dark in there.
It was dark, Sunset Boulevard location, which is always sort of, there's like, you know, some razzle-dazzle around that lore. And they also had great Christmas decorations. That's what I remember.
They were festive and like a dependable place to go get a drink with someone. Smash Cut 2, the Pikey closes. It's taken over by a group of like chic restaurateurs, reopens as Horses, which becomes the most popular restaurant in Los Angeles in terms of like, it's impossible to get a reservation. All the celebs are going there and it's like very like she.
A real who's who mm-hmm. type of situation.
They painted the door blue, put some horse murals on the wall, beefed up the menu and called it a day. And everyone, including me, was dying to get in.
And then, to our surprise, a little article comes out in the LA Times with a companion voice note that got sent around the city.
Yeah. So I think first there was like rumblings of a rumor that started on Twitter. And I think a niche, very cool publicist was tweeting like, I've heard this horse's drama and I wish I could like unhear it soon enough. Like horse's Twitter was exploding and there were all these rumors and there was this voice note getting sent around about one of the chefs there named Will Ajanian, I believe is how you pronounce it. Allegedly, he and his partner were adopting kittens for a long time, and mysteriously these kittens would die one after another to the point where their fellow horses, employees, and coworkers were like, maybe you should get your house tested for mold, like something's really off about this. And then according to the voice note rumor that circulated all over town, the wife went out.
Hold on, wait. I just have to preface this that your life will be divided into two, pre-knowing this information and post-knowing this information.
Yeah.
So
prepare. Trigger warning. The wife went out. She realized, oh my God, I forgot something. Came back inside to find that her husband was jerking off and strangling a kitten. And then she realized, oh my God, my husband is a kitten killer. And then I guess this whole really ugly divorce proceedings started to occur. And then now the husband has fled to Thailand, where he is doing like restaurant pop-ups in Bangkok, like as recently as like a couple weeks ago. And I think he's out of the country. So TBD on what's happening. I don't think he's with horses anymore. I think horses is still going and I guess is hotter than ever now.
They're thriving.
And I think a good scandal like this if you're a really chic restaurant, I think a good scandal beefs up business.
Yeah, it's definitely adding a layer. The thing that really caught my attention with this entire thing is it really isn't just this like one alleged isolated incident. This couple had restaurants in New York and was involved in restaurants in Nashville and then came to LA and sort of burned bridges in each locale. And I'm always fascinated with people who can like just fuck it up and then move on to the next.
That's very much American culture, I feel like. Like you always have a second chance.
Turns out.
Yeah.
Or third or fourth.
Or maybe it's like, if you're white, you probably have many second chances. But this is like a really beyond kooky and crazy white couple who are just making restaurants everywhere they go and then fielding scandal after scandal. So what came out in that Grub Street article was like, this guy, Will, is like a total freak. Like people were saying that he tried to have his chef underlings like rip the heads off of rabbits and like to prepare a dish, like wanted to see them do it. Like he has a history of like doing really fucked up, like serial killer-esque behaviors.
He allegedly mixed worms into a grinder with monkfish and sheep's liver and fed it to the staff for a family meal. This was at the New York restaurant.
Yeah. You're a killer. You are.
Incidents like that that seem truly psychotic. And then I think the cherry on top of this entire scandal, which I highly recommend reading the article, we're going to provide links in the show notes, is that they have completely conflicting stories around what's going on.
Yeah. The wife is saying that the husband is like a cat killer, kitten murderer. His employees are saying he's psychotic. He mixes up all this weird food. He has a long history of animal abuse and like just doing things that are really off and weird. And he says that it's actually Elizabeth who's the psychotic one, who's like burned him purposely on several occasions, who's abused him, and he's terrified for his life and his well-being. But she's the one that's been granted the restraining order by a judge. So I tend to fall where a restraining order falls, although I think we've learned from Vanderpump Rules that sometimes restraining orders aren't the real deal. So this is also just unfolding still. Like, we don't know where this guy is. He could be in Bangkok. I heard another rumor that was circulating that there were mysterious, like, sex worker deaths in Bangkok that he could potentially be connected to. And to be honest, like, his behavior sounds like the behavior of Jeffrey Dahmer. So while I don't wish any death on anyone or anything, I'm really like, stay tuned. What if this is like a new serial killer emerging and it came out of like a fashionable celebrity haunt of a restaurant?
I give this one an A.
Yeah, I give it an A plus. It has everything.
It's some of the best that we've seen.
Great drama, high stakes. No one has been spared. Animals, potentially humans. Two warring sides of the story. Ripe for IP. Where's the doc? We're waiting. I'm sure it will come. Where's the movie or limited series? Like, I'm sure someone's developing it. Or maybe they're not because of the writer's strike. But this is a reason to wrap that strike up because we need the horses miniseries
we
now.
We need Max on this ASAP. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really niche. And it has me reading a lot of articles and think pieces and going down multiple Reddit threads, which is a sign of a good scandal.
What's Reddit saying?
What's interesting about the Reddit of it all is it made it into not only Food Los Angeles, which is one of my personal favorite subreddits, but then it made it into like Faux Moi, which is sort of like the Faux Du Moi pop culture chat.
Okay. Yeah. I'm really just need more follow-up.
Yeah. Dying for it. I mean, the latest article that came out was just saying that it hasn't hurt business, which I appreciate the PR getting on top of that.
Oh, yeah. Real quick. I think it's still really... I think the first question was, does that mean Horses is going to close, though? Then the second question was, oh, will it be easier to get a res now, though? And then now it's like, oh, it's actually going to be harder and the restaurant's still open.
What I hate about these things is that it shows how truly psychotic you can be and how successful you can be at the same time.
Totally. And it also shows people's, like, the consumer's true nature, which is like, we're not taking a stand, me included. I like want to go to Horses. I would, if someone invited me to go to Horses, I'd be like, yes, let's go tomorrow, tonight. Like, when are we going? I'm down. But it's like, we're not bothered by this. But there's some things that I'm like, some scandals that we're going to get to where I'm like, oh, I'm really bothered by this and I'll never go. Like, I have like weird beef around this restaurant particularly. So mm-hmm. like, I'm done. I'm happy to be done. I no longer want to like look back. But for some reason, a scandal like this elevates the status.
The lore.
And the lore. Yeah. Yeah. But this is like...
wild.
Yeah, this is a sick lore, but also like a chic lore. I'm sorry to say.
Okay, so the next one, I want to keep it into LA because this one, the impact that this had on me was deep. We're bringing it back to July 13th of 2020. Which all of us were just at our screens. And I will never forget this photo.
No.
We're talking about Moldgate of 2020, where a employee of the famed restaurant Squirrel posted a photo of the most disgusting bucket of moldy jam.
This is, I'm now looking at the photo again. I actually like had forgotten how disgusting it was. And it really is the
it's
grossest
putrid.
Thing. Mm-hmm.
So Squirrel is a delightful little restaurant, mainly like breakfast, brunch, lunch vibes in Virgil Village, which is a great little area for cuisine in the east side of Los Angeles. And They are known for their jams. They package them. An employee just one day, feeling disgruntled, decided to post this photo of this huge bucket of jam with layers of mold in it and shared that they're told to just scrape the mold off of the jam.
Yeah, they were whistleblowing on the entire jam production, saying that it was produced in like an unlicensed food facility that was hidden from the health department inspectors and would be like locked in the dark. And then all the jam had mold on it. And they were told, like, it's NBD. We got to get this jam out. I never understood, like, the jam craze that Squirrel started. I'm like, who are these like jam heads that are keeping, that are like loving this jam so much? Like, yes, I've had the ricotta toast with some jam. It was good, but I'm not like dying to jam it up 24/7 with like Squirrel's jam. I think this was like a perfect 2020 scandal and kind of just shows how bored everyone was.
Perfect.
Because
it speaks to the boredom. It also speaks to the rage that people had.
Yeah.
That they're just looking to unleash on anything.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Carrie and I unleashed on Sup like mega about Squirrel Jam, like made a lot of fun of it. But at the end of the day, in retrospect, I'm like, who gives a fucking shit? Like, who cares truly? Like, mold isn't great, but also, I don't know. It's really like low stakes at the end of the day. And the restaurant didn't get canceled.
They survived, which great for them.
Yeah.
I enjoy going there. It doesn't stop me.
Mm-hmm.
The owner came out and said that the mold is from basically the low sugar addition that they have in their jam recipe. And that's what creates the mold quicker than, you know, something with a higher sugar content. Then the USDA basically pointed out that, like, you technically shouldn't still be scooping out unmoldy jam from jam that has been molded at the surface like that. So conflicting perspectives. I would prefer a less moldy jam myself. I also would prefer to be able to unsee that photo, but you can't.
You can't, and it really didn't stop me. I have eaten Squirrel and eaten the jam since then. And I guess I'm too trusting with food prep, but I think it's also a power move to be like, actually, the mold is because this is so healthy.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's an argument I can get behind.
They also have a really cute little market next door. Like, if you get takeout, that's where you order from. But they've got great charcuterie supplies there for any of our fellow charcuterie heads. Highly recommend.
Yeah, this scandal to me, D+.
Oh, okay.
I think it was like, it shows kind of how losery everyone was during 2020. And the fact that we all got really hyped around this and tried to like cancel just a jam maker is like lame. And I feel embarrassed for contributing to the witch hunt. And I think we all need to take time and reflect. So yeah, it's D+ for me.
I'm going to give it a C because I like how it took the internet by storm. I also think it really, as you pointed out, says a lot about our headspace at the time. And I think that we should all keep it in mind when like getting in a tizzy.
Definitely.
Learn things and move on.
Oh, yeah. Should we do another LA-centric scandal?
Sure.
The Bel Campo.
Oh, I love this one.
Okay, you have to explain this one because I like did not, I think I was in a fugue state when this came out and like it never registered for me whatsoever. I'd never even heard of it until we started making this list.
Bel Campo was the farm to be getting your meat sourced from. So not only did they have a farm, but they were a butcher shop and they had a regional restaurant chain, and their whole deal was that this is, you know, I hate to use this phrase because like ethically sourced meat is, I don't think is a thing, but yeah. Their whole thing was that it's like mindfully produced meat. They had a butcher shop in Grand Central Market downtown. They had a little cute like burger shop in West Hollywood that all the nutritionists I knew and all of like the super foodie health conscious people I knew were like, it's all about Belcampo meat. They sold it at Erewhon. It was just sort of poised as if you're going to be consuming any type of red meat, this is where you get it from. And they did, you know, like all of their press, their entire brand, everything was built on this ethical sourcing and like how they raise their animals. And they really leaned in hard on this storyline. And then let's give it up to another disgruntled employee. They always come through. This is why you have to treat your employees well.
Yeah.
A gentleman by the name of Evan Rayner posted a video to his Instagram that alleged that the company was selling meat from other farms that were even from other countries, but labeled and sold the various cuts as their own product and saying that it came from their farm in Gazelle, California. So
damn.
It's still up. You can see the post. And they were literally taking meat and repackaging it with their own packaging and putting it on the shelves of Erewhon, of their own stores, claiming that it was from their farm. And they didn't make it through the scandal. Surprise, surprise.
Wow.
They completely shuttered. It's a done deal.
Wow. That was a fast shuttering too.
Yeah.
You know what? I never tried Belcampo. I always was like, I don't know. It never spoke to me. I knew I am a burger lover. So it's surprising that I never went down that road, but it just really didn't, it didn't hit for me. I don't think I like the name. That's the only thing I can think of.
Intuitively, maybe you just knew that it was a farce.
Yeah, they're full of
shit.
And
a grift. Yeah. And I kind of like this one. I feel like I just remember them like pitching to be on my podcast to talk about meat. And I was like, I'm not sure if that's the vibe, but like, God bless. They really were going hard and like making the rounds of like the wellness world. And then to see this happen, it's just like so classic.
It's very classic. And I appreciate also trolling people who get such self-satisfaction out of like buying like really expensive like local products. Like that to me, there's nothing, truly nothing more annoying than someone that's just like obsessed with like, is it local though? Is it local? Like I, sure, like let's get local stuff, but also like get a fucking grip. And so the fact that like very smug, wealthy people or people who consider themselves like just champions of the earth and of like good ethical meat practices got trolled in the process, that's great to me. That's fitting.
Yeah, I give this one a B+.
Yeah, I give it a B+ as well.
It's just like, it's strong, it's good. It's a, we get a great lesson
mm-hmm.
out of it.
Don't be full of shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, like literally just all you had to do was just also you could say like the majority we try to do here, but we also do some other places and you still
or
would
just
be
say,
fine.
Demand is too high. We need to pump the brakes and you get your stuff together and then you come back out and create scarcity complex and demand.
Smart. This is a good like karmic circle. Also, just pay yep. your employees well and like they won't want to fuck you over. It's pretty simple.
Exactly.
It's actually shocking, especially in the restaurant industry, because like I think you people are like criminally underpaid and there is this like hierarchy of power to where like if you're at the bottom of the food chain, you're getting like shit on all day. But like that's going to bite you in the ass later on. Why don't we travel like across Middle America for a bit?
I think that's great. I think with the meat of it all, this brings us perfectly into 1992 to 1993, the Jack in the Box E. coli outbreak.
This put E. coli on the map.
certainly did. She was really the it food poisoning of the time, because this is actually the most infamous food poisoning outbreak in contemporary history, when contaminated beef made its way into the Jack in the Box supply and killed 4 children and infected 732 people across the United States. And what's sad about this is the majority of the affected were under 10 years old, and 4 children passed away.
That's really dark. Like, that's like a legacy that I don't wish on anyone. When you're...
No, it's so sad.
Affecting children and killing children. Okay, I just Googled it, and E. coli comes from contaminated water or food, especially raw vegetables and undercooked ground beef. So it was just like they weren't cooking the meat.
Not cooked properly?
That's also like...
No.
Just number one, the one thing to teach people who work at a burger joint is like you just have to cook the burger all the
way.
Cook
it all the way. Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, I gotta give this one a D just because it's horrific.
It's not a fun, sexy scandal.
No, it's not sexy. I don't want any type of streaming recognition from this one. I hope it never happens again. I think Jack in the Box isn't doing itself any favors with the scary mascot.
No, he seems sinister at best.
Yeah. So I actually don't think I've ever been to a Jack in the Box.
It wasn't my first choice ever.
No.
I was more of a Carl's Jr. girl.
If I'm doing it, I'm just like going straight McDonald's.
I go like McDonald's fries, which has been, especially this year, has been like a great like late night treat if I'm like going home after a night out or something, or like especially like not drinking, just being like, oh, I'm leaving, but I'm like a little hungry, I want a salty snack. Doing a hit in the McDonald's drive through for fries and a Diet Coke is great. But if I'm going to go burger, I'm probably going to go like Hi-Ho cheeseburger or In-N-Out or somewhere that's like does like a good.
Yeah. To be honest, McDonald's is my number one because of their tech. They're like number one in the food ordering tech space right now. And I noticed that, and I like the innovation. So that's what brings me to McDonald's.
The seamlessness.
Case study me. Let's do it. I love just like a McDonald's road trip.
Yeah. I like a McDonald's. I like a scream at the screen and then have everything pop up that you want, but have no problem with the communication or hearing, and then being able to like double check everything, read it, and then move on with my life with a no touch.
And hopefully soon with AI, you can just think it.
Yeah.
Think your order.
AI also, if you just hire robots and say, please cook the meat to this temperature, then we can avoid E. coli outbreaks in the future.
There you go. Always thinking.
Yeah, I also give this one a D for don't do it
again.
Speaking
of McDonald's, this one's pretty iconic.
Mm-hmm.
A 79-year-old woman sued McDonald's for $20,000 because of the burns she suffered from accidentally spilling her coffee in her lap. She suffered third-degree burns that sent her to the hospital, nearly killed her, and required 2 years of medical treatment. The reason why McDonald's used to have their coffee so scalding was to avoid doing refills. So it used to be between 180 degrees Fahrenheit and 190 degrees Fahrenheit. And prior to the lawsuit, they had received multiple complaints about this. McDonald's actually ended up losing the lawsuit and had to pay up to $600,000, and then had to permanently lower the temperature of their coffee. And I believe the reason why there's the warning of the hot coffee on the lids now is from this case.
Yeah. And honestly, when I first heard about this case, I was victim blaming. I said, doesn't this lady know that coffee's hot? Like, don't spill it. But now, as I'm reading more about it and I have all the details, I'm like, what a saint, only seeking out $20,000. That's nothing.
From McDonald's?
From McDonald's, of all things. Also, I was like a 79-year-old woman. Do you know how thin your skin is by the time you're 79? And like to get third-degree burns that take years to recover from, like she should be getting millions, even 600,000 too low. That should have been at least really? Like 10 to 20 million.
And it was a landmark case.
Mm-hmm.
We all know about the McDonald's hot coffee case.
You know that also recently McDonald's was in hot water again for their chicken nuggets being too hot and it burned a kid.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I think that the chicken nugget got caught like between the seatbelt and the kid's leg and like burned the leg. So now they're being sued again.
Honestly, there is a roadmap for how this goes. So they should.
Yeah, I think I'm all for huge, massive corporations that have like are probably giving people cancer via their food to have to pay out like massive sums of money.
Also, if your reasoning for making the liquid so hot is to avoid giving refills to people, that says everything.
Oh, they were just found liable after a child suffered burns from hot chicken nuggets. A Florida jury returned a split verdict. They're liable, the franchise owner, for failing to properly warn or provide reasonable instructions on the possible harm from hot McNuggets. Here's what the law firm said. This is not the infamous hot coffee case. This is Olivia's case, the law firm said in a statement to WPLG. She's an adorable, innocent child who was severely burned through no fault of her own. And McDonald's has given a statement where they called it an unfortunate incident, but they respectfully disagree with the verdict. Fuck you.
How much do they have to pay?
I think initially it was $3
million. Inflation.
I know, but she settled for less. The plaintiff was initially awarded $3 million, but she settled for less after an appeal. Good for her. I hope they live a nice life now.
Me too. I give this one a B+.
I give it like a B- because it's like, it's just kind of like annoying and sad, but also like telling. It's also like kind of where we are, telling as to where we are as a culture, the fact that things are still hot and hurting people. And like, I feel like McDonald's hasn't been held like liable enough for everything they do.
Oh, certainly not. But I will celebrate their tech forwardness.
Mm-hmm. And I'll eat their fries.
And that's just the dichotomy of where we are.
Supersize Me, just for a quick tangent, really changed a lot of things for me.
Yes, but I feel like McDonald's should only be consumed as a once in a while thing. And that's obviously not taking into account the food deserts in America and obviously the placement of where McDonald's are, which is usually in like a lower socioeconomic region where food accessibility isn't quite what it is everywhere else.
Yeah, or just like off the highway, the ease at which you can get it.
Supersize Me, dark, but there is a movie called The Founder. Did you ever see that one with Michael Keaton?
No.
About the creation of McDonald's?
How was it?
So good. It's about the inception of the McDonald's franchise and like a man in a dream with a burger recipe. And I loved it.
What they have been able to accomplish in that space particularly is fascinating.
Yeah.
The squirrel chef could learn a thing or two about how to not have food ever get moldy, because I do think that you can leave McDonald's burgers just out in the wild. Not only will animals not eat it, but it just won't even, nothing happens to it. It doesn't get moldy. It doesn't like rot. It just is essentially like formaldehyde burger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now we have to take like a extremely dark and twisted turn.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Jared from Subway scandal.
From one mass food chain to the next, we now visit Subway, who invested 15 years into having Jared Fogel, a famously overweight gentleman who decided to restrict his calories by consuming 2 6-inch long Subways a day. Was that the diet? Or was
I can't
he
remember,
three?
But it was like he was losing all this weight by just sticking to a Subway sandwich diet, which is actually ingenious marketing because I don't think that I could, I don't think that that would work for me. I don't think I would lose weight just eating Subway sandwiches. I don't think most people would lose weight just eating Subway sandwiches, but they branded themselves through this like commercial and this partnership as like the healthy fast food option, to where it was like, oh, if like you're looking to live like a more healthy, conscious, healthful lifestyle, you too. Or if you're overweight and you really don't want to change that much about your diet or exercise, come to Subway, have yourself like two six-inch subs a day, and you too will just shed pounds.
Jared Fogle was basically, and I hate to use this comparison, but he was basically influencing.
He was one of the original influencers.
One of the OGs, without question. And they used him as a spokesperson for years. Then they started wrapping in other people, other real life people who had also done this. And it was like a Jared Fogle society of people who followed this Subway diet. And I think it was so ingrained in popular culture for so long. It was just Subway really latched on to this guy.
Well, he was synonymous. Like when you think of Subway, you think of Jared Fogle.
Yeah. And I was assessing this and watching, which I really don't recommend watching, but there is a documentary on Max called Jared from Subway, Catching a Monster. And I was just really taken with how this like regular, degular white guy was able to be the face of this brand. And I think it kind of only works because of that vanilla-ness.
Totally.
And they invested so much into marketing this diet, marketing him as the face. He would go around to schools representing his quote unquote nonprofit, which was the Jared Foundation, where he talked about obesity. And then in 2015, he was found guilty of child pornography and paying for sex with minors. Subway immediately dropped Fogle when the charges came out, and he is going to be in prison until 2029.
Not long enough. Not long enough.
Not long enough.
Like, that's coming right up.
The movie or doc, it was like whatever it is, like a three-parter expose, was so dark.
What were they doing?
And I hated it.
They were part, were they part of like a child porn ring?
No. Basically, there was this woman in his life who had a radio show. And she sort of, he had said something in an interview about how he was like really into younger kids and took it upon herself to investigate this. So she started a relationship with him and got recordings of him saying what he wanted to do to minors. And she was working with the FBI, and it basically, she had valid evidence, and then they didn't do anything. And it was like this real long con of trying to catch him doing an actual crime. And it's three episodes. So a little longer than I would have liked.
This woman's a hero.
Yeah. And it also was, it just got really dark for her. And she like was on some vigilante shit, really.
She really was. What the fame is a real bitch, because how are you going to be out here giving interviews to radio shows saying that you're attracted to kids?
She said it off the mic, like in passing.
How are you?
Not that that's okay.
But like, also, how you've got to know better than that. Like, to think
clearly
that you're just like able to just be like, drop that casually to anyone is like, you're, like you have like God complex or something. You think you're like above the law.
Well, I mean, Subway, this huge national chain.
He's a god.
I blame them.
He's a god of the fast food world.
It's the darkest thing. I really wish I had those hours back.
You know, I also never liked Jared. Never trusted him. I was like, you're sick. I don't like it. I don't like Subway. I think it smells weird. I used to be a huge, huge Subway fan. Like in my youth, I was known to go for a crab salad, 6-inch sub. I like the finer things in life. I like seafood. So that really did it for me. But once Jared came into the mix, I was like, I've had enough of this place.
See you later, sandwich artists. Mm-hmm. We're out of here. I always did, when I was a girl on a budget, not that I'm still not on a budget, but early 20s, I would always split a foot long with my friend every day. And we just would get the veggie.
You're on the Subway diet.
All the veggies. Yeah, it was full. I was fully on the Jared plan for like a number of years.
Wow. There's a really good like small chain in Oklahoma City called City Bites that is like Subway sandwiches, baked potatoes, and some other stuff, but they have a really delicious veggie sub.
Ooh.
I just ordered one last night.
My sub locale of choice is Potbelly's. We don't have it in LA, but they have it on the East Coast and in the Midwest.
Potbelly's was a real problem for me living in Chicago. It was so close. There's a Potbelly's on every corner.
Reigned supreme in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Full on. Big fan. I love those cookies too.
They're shakes. And? No, it was all about a chocolate malt and they put like a little cookie on the straw. It was festive. And their Italian Potbelly sandwich was so good.
And you know what? Scandal free. I know. To my knowledge.
Potbelly is doing things right out here. Even having a sick name like Potbelly's and they still managed to get me, they're doing the Lord's work.
Horrible name, but delicious sandwiches.
Okay, Jared from Subway scandal.
This one gets an F.
An F for I feel icky. I don't like it.
Yeah.
How did Subway bounce back from this also? Did they have lawsuits or anything against them?
Not that I know of. It's a real branding exercise.
How are they still around? I need more. I'm about to launch an investigation of like lawsuits and payoffs. Because you would think that once this thing dropped, then it would be like, okay, Subway, like you're liable for giving this predator like a platform to abuse children. And I want money.
That's a good point. Dark.
So crazy.
So dark.
So I don't eat Subway. Haven't in years. Don't plan on it. It's not for me.
Agree. I don't even know Subway who.
Yeah. I couldn't even tell you where a Subway is. I have Subway blindness. It doesn't register.
Speaking of fallen faces, Papa John's CEO.
Papa John's CEO has been like a problematic figure in the media for a while now, right?
Yeah, I think he always was sort of like Trumpian and in that world. But his name, John Hampton Schnatter, a.k.a. Papa John, he stepped down as CEO on January 1st, 2018, after controversy around his comments that the National Football League, who had a business affiliation with Papa John's, had not done enough to stop the national anthem. Protests by NFL players and the protests had hurt Papa John's business. So basically, he was against taking a knee very vocally.
Okay, well, that's going to start alienating you. It's like, babe, read the room.
And then it came out that he had also used the N-word during a conference call in May of 2018. And he was promptly booted from the company and his image was removed from all marketing materials.
Wow. Okay, yeah. Final nail in the coffin for sure. Also tracks with his NFL feelings. Then I remember he's sick. I remember him giving like a really sweaty interview where he said like that he's eaten. After he got fired, he said he ate 40 pizzas in 30 days and it just wasn't the same pizza. he was trying to do retroactive quality control just to see. I was like, you got to move on. It's time to move on. Like, you had your fun. You wore Papa John and now you're not. And like, learn from the consequences of your actions and stop dwelling in the past. Also, like, don't eat 40 pizzas in 30 days. You have a death wish.
I've never Papa John'd, and I'm proud to say it.
Wow. Papa John's was a huge game changer for me, unfortunately, because they were the first people to really bring that like garlic dipping sauce to the table in a real way. And that won me over, and I became like a Papa John's fan after that. But now everyone does this sauce, and like, if I'm gonna go just like bad good pizza, I'm a Domino's girl. Even though they've had some,
oh, I love Domino's,
scandals of their own.
Thin crust, all the veggies. That's my favorite Domino's order.
I like a pan pizza.
Oh, also good. Being from Michigan, it's the home of not only Domino's, but Little Caesars. So I was always straddling the line between Little Caesars and Domino's. I know Little Caesars, controversial. People don't like it.
That's a business I do not understand how that has survived all these years, because to me, like, I gave Little Caesars a lot of chances growing up because I like their mascot. I kind of like their color scheme. The like Roman affiliation was really working for me from just like an Italian standpoint of like branding, but I was never wowed.
Well, I think the hot and ready always really got people through the door.
Mm.
$5 hot and ready that's now gone up in price. But the owners of Little Caesars also own all of the entertainment venues in all of Detroit, as well as the Red Wings. And I want to say the baseball team as well.
So it's Little Caesars Nation.
So it's a real... Yeah, it is. Also used to be the personal assistant for one of the owner's wives way back in the day.
Huge.
And had my first PR internship in like working for their entertainment group. So I was like, my knowledge of the owners of the Little Caesars chain runs inexplicably deep. And
you're in the dynasty.
Sometimes things. Yeah.
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 Okay. I love that. And I'm now realizing the move is to own everything.
Yep.
Is to own the pizza place, but then also own everything else and feed that food item out to every venue that you own.
The move is to have a holdings group, basically, is the biggest takeaway.
Okay. Yeah. And then get a sports team involved, and then you're sitting pretty.
Papa John's is getting, disgusting.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a D plus, where I wish there was an in between a C minus and a D plus, because as I've said on previous episodes, like whenever someone goes wildly out of line and like shares their extremely controversial and like problematic views, but then triples down and says something insane, like I've eaten 40 pizzas in 30 days, then I'm always like, okay, what's up with this person? So that to me is a little, that's entertaining. When they take it to like a place of Charlie Sheen interview, you've hooked me, because now you're giving me the razzle dazzle.
Okay, now we're going to go a little lighter, a little less deep ramifications. We've got James Corden banned from a popular New York City restaurant and the owner calls him the most abusive customer.
I loved this one. Yeah.
So Keith McNally, who's 71, he owns Baltazar in New York City. He basically took to Instagram and he said, James Corden is a hugely gifted comedian, but a tiny crichton of a man. He is the most abusive customer to my Baltazar servers since the restaurant opened 25 years ago. I don't often 86 a customer, but today I 86'd Corden. It did not make me laugh. This guy McNally sounds like drama.
He's nothing but drama on Instagram. He is always getting like really inflammatory on his posts, and it's he's one of the people that's worth following on Instagram because he overshares. He has like pretty wild opinions, but I don't think anything's veered into like deeply problematic, like racism. But it's like it's like one of those things where it wouldn't be so surprising if it went down that road eventually. But it, for now, it's staying in like a just your starting drama and oversharing.
So he went ahead and shared not one, but two manager reports of their experience with James Corden. My favorite one was manager report number two, where he says, and I quote, James Corden was at Baltazar with his wife on October 9th for brunch. He asked for a table outside. Brunch maitre d' Allie Walters took the party to table 301. Mr. Corden's wife ordered an egg yolk omelet with Gruyere cheese and a salad. A few minutes after they received the food, James called their server, MK, and told her there was a little bit of egg white mixed with the egg yolk. MK informed the floor manager, G. The kitchen remade the dish, but unfortunately sent it with home fries instead of salad. That's when James Corden began yelling like crazy at the server. You can't do your job. You can't do your job. Maybe I should go into the kitchen and cook the omelet myself. MK was very apologetic and brought G over to the table. He returned the dish, and after that, everything was fine. He gave them promo champagne glasses to smooth things out. G said that Corden was pleasant to him, but nasty to the server. MK was very shaken, but professional that she is, she continued to finish her shift. I love how he's like, Anon, please.
This had everything in this saga lasted for like weeks. Keith McNally waged a war on James Corden, and it was what I had personally been waiting for because I've never liked James Corden. I've always just been like, who is this man? Where did he come from? Suddenly he's in Cats. He's like, everyone loves him, but like, why? I don't get it. And I always was like, I don't trust him. And then this was incredible tea and like just really good drama. It was the first time anyone had been like, oh, this person's a piece of shit. And TBD, if these rumors are even true, like, I could just see Keith having a chip on his shoulder or like James joking around. I have a friend who worked for James Corden for years who said that he was like the nicest person. And it actually made me come around being like, he probably is like really nice and delightful, like total opposite. And this friend had worked for Ellen before, so he knew like what was good and what was
diabolical.
Bad. But I just like, I like celebrity
I just feel
drama.
Like, totally. And I think it says everything about a person of how they treat wait staff.
Oh, yeah. You can't be a bitch to a waiter ever.
No.
He like denied everything, if memory serves.
I also just love ordering a yolk only.
Why don't you want the whites?
I think sometimes people have like a food, an egg allergy, and it's usually like can be the whites or the yolk, not always both.
Strange. A yolk only omelet sounds pretty good.
Oh, I love this part that McNally told Page Six that he was reluctant to make the post about Corden, but did so out of loyalty to restaurant servers everywhere. He added, their jobs are already hard enough. They shouldn't have to take this kind of abuse from anyone, especially the rich and famous.
Amen.
So, amen. I like that he took it into his own hands. You don't have to just be a disgruntled restaurant worker to put someone on blast. You can be the owner too.
Yeah. And America was honestly ready to turn on Corden. So he just hit at the right time in the zeitgeist to just like blast him.
Did you see him on the new Kardashians episode?
No, I haven't watched any of them yet. I'm like saving for a binge.
Bank it.
But I know that he's like good friends with the whole Kardashian clan.
Yeah, he's just hanging out. So maybe that says something. Who knows? I give this one an A.
Yeah, I give it an A too. Because it was ultimately very low stakes, high drama, which I appreciated.
Yeah, and it, like it came in like a storm, left, business as usual. I like that. I like when everyone is in a tizzy, makes it to People magazine, and then it's gone.
Yeah,
and flash.
It gave us all something to talk about. It's incredible. I mean, Keith McNally is like an incredible marketer because the way he runs his Instagram is like, very authentic, but then something like this is just like built-in marketing for the restaurant, which ups the status of the restaurant because it's obviously somewhere where like celebrities go often. I mean, pretty much every time I'm in New York, I like to go to Balthazar, and it's like always been like the loveliest experience and so much fun. So I like it.
It always hits.
Yeah, it always hits, never disappoints.
Let's keep it in New York City while we're here. This next one, many are familiar with the Netflix documentary Bad Vegan and the accompanying Vanity Fair article entitled How Sarma Mangalis, Queen of Vegan Cuisine, Became a Runaway Fugitive. Drama.
I remember this article coming out and being like, holy shit, this is a crazy story. And then Bad Vegan was another, I think it was 2020 or 2021, just another great documentary about slipping into kind of like an altered state of mind. Like what she went through is beyond just, like she scammed, but it was beyond scamming and slipped into like another realm entirely.
Sarma was the it raw vegan food chef in New York City. She had Pure Food and Wine. Have you been there? I have been there a few times.
I haven't, but it really started like the raw food restaurant revolution. And when I moved to LA, it was kind of around the same time that tons of raw food restaurants opened around like Santa Monica, where I lived when I first moved here. And I loved nothing more than like this one raw food restaurant in Santa Monica that had like the best milkshakes and like really good pastas.
What was it called?
It was on, I want to say like 6th and, it was like right in downtown Santa Monica, like 6th and Olympic maybe, or like 6th and, was it Revolution? That might have been on Ocean Avenue. It was run by like a guy who was like always there. And I think for a while they were filming, trying to get like a reality show off the ground of all like the waiters and the owner that worked there, because it was a scene. And yeah, even when I first moved to LA, like I came out for a week in July of 2008 to visit and kind of figure out where my apartment was going to be. And my friend that I was staying with was also obsessed with these raw food restaurants. And she's like, we have to go to all these restaurants. You'll love them. And I ate so much raw food that I almost shit myself in the airport flying back to Chicago. Like it was a real moment.
Little LA souvenir.
Yeah.
So yeah, Pure Food and Wine was the it spot in New York City. Tons of press, tons of celebrity clientele. In fact, famously, Alec Baldwin met Ilaria at Pure Food and Wine. And Sarma Mangalis, she was the owner and sort of the face of this restaurant. She met this guy, Anthony Strangis, AKA Shane Fox. And she actually started talking to him because he was in sort of like this tweet rapport with Alec Baldwin. So she was like, oh, he's legit because Alec is engaging with him on social media. That was like sort of one of the things that ingratiated her towards him, which I think is so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
So they started dating and things just took this wild turn where he was basically using her to embezzle all this money from the funds of the restaurant and investors. He had an insane gambling addiction that no one knew about at the time. And he coerced her to steal all this money from the restaurant to the point where employees were no longer getting paid. And they sort of like went on the run. And she was found because they used a personal credit card for a Domino's order. And that's how the authorities were able to track them down and arrested them.
Yeah. And he was like telling her, he basically like indoctrinated her into a cult of one, where he was promising her kind of all these like spiritual, like she would like spiritually ascend in the afterlife with him, and like he was putting through her through a series of tests, financial tests, to see if she would like ascend to like the next level and like become immortal with him, and she kind of just bought it.
And the dog. He promised that the dog would be immortal. That was sort of like the thing that grabbed her. And in the Bad Vegan documentary that's on Netflix, she was like, I wish I could say that I was like on drugs or something that could explain my devotion to this person. But it wasn't that. It was like purely he just coerced her into this belief system that ended up
destroying her life. Yeah.
Yeah. Truly bad. But I did think like the headlines like vegan Bernie Madoff and all of that were so sensationalized. And I felt like what was presented as the story at first, once you dig deeper, it was really not as sinister. Like this man was sinister, but she didn't seem to be. She was going along with this other man's plan and sort of used as like a cog in supporting his gambling addiction and all of like he's a bad guy. He ended up going to jail because he couldn't post bail, and he got let go because he was charged with time served already. So he didn't even really get too deeply punished for all of this.
And she did. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hope that she can have some sort of comeback, like TBD on who would invest. But I feel like where there's a will, there's a way, and something could be like guaranteed or something like that. Because she was a visionary and like an entrepreneur in the raw food space.
Yeah, this one makes me sad.
It makes me really sad, but it also is an A+ because it's definitely just it's so insane to see the level of deceit that she was like sucked into and like truly brainwashed. It's like, wow, it's just crazy. And also, I guess could happen to anyone, certainly not me at this point in life, but like, it seems like she's done some of the work around like, why did I believe this? And why was I so ripe for the picking of like, just falling prey to this scammer?
So sad. And the restaurant was really delish from what I remember. So hopefully she can come back.
Okay, I found
onto the food scene.
Yeah, I pray for her comeback. I mean, all raw food restaurants really have taken a hit. Like, I can't think of many anymore. Cafe Gratitude has some raw items on the menu, but it's like mostly just vegan. The restaurant I used to go to was called Giuliano's Raw, and it was on 6th and Broadway in Santa Monica.
Oh.
And apparently Giuliano Brotman, the owner, was a founding father of the raw food movement. I think it's time for the raw food movement to come back. I feel that it really could. Gen Z, TikTok, Raw Talk, where are you?
Well, the whole thing that right now where the food industry is, I just read this article that the Instagram era was like really photogenic food and very like I think the raw movement really worked well for Instagram. But what's really working now is the TikTokification of food, which is like a lot of extra like drizzles of sauces and like flaming things up. Now you got to have a gimmick.
Yeah.
And restaurants are really feeding into that. And I just find that funny and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Food talk.
Oh, apparently there's a restaurant called Raw in West Hollywood that's Giuliano's other restaurant, but people are saying it's closed, but then Yelp is saying it's open, but it only has 3.5 stars. So this is a too niche mystery that I will be reporting on. We have two more scandals.
In England, Krispy Kreme donut chain had to apologize due to a campaign promoting KKK Wednesdays. That's right. That's the K's stood for Krispy Kreme Club, but they were confused by the fact that it was a reference to the Ku Klux Klan, a well-known American hate group. And so it was just like it was a bad day for Krispy Kreme internationally, but they recovered.
Yeah. the Krispy Kreme Club was like a short-lived community. Sorry to the members that were just trying to gather over their shared love for Krispy Kreme donuts, which are delicious. Unfortunately, maybe you need a couple more people on your marketing team to just like run things by before you declare something a KKK day. KKK Wednesdays really didn't take off the way that they thought it would. And I'm sad for whoever got so excited and so inspired to like launch this idea only to realize that they'd made the biggest mistake of their career.
It's kind of funny.
It's really funny.
The good thing is Krispy Kreme is so delicious. It speaks for itself that it was able to survive such a mishap.
And Krispy Kreme seems, out of every food item that we've kind of discussed, it seems to be like the least problematic one of the bunch. Like the most family friendly, kind of universally adored, unproblematic. So it's doubly funny when they have such like a insane misstep. Like KKK Wednesday.
Yeah, I give it a B+.
Same.
And now finally, last but not least, we've made it to the end of this particularly niche haul. We're talking about Mario Batali.
One last sex pest to knock off the list.
So Mario Batali is a renowned celebrity chef, or was a renowned celebrity chef and restaurateur. He gained fame through his appearances on various cooking shows on the Food Network, including Malto Mario and Iron Chef America. However, in late 2017, multiple women came forward with allegations of sexual misconduct against Batali.
Batali got Me Too'd hugely.
Huge. So the allegations range from inappropriate touching to creating an unsafe and hostile work environment. Following the accusations, Batali stepped away from his restaurant empire and was fired from the TV show The Chew. He also issued a public apology and announced that he would be seeking professional help. His business partners decided to dissolve their partnerships with him. That included Babbo, Del Posto, and one of my faves, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Completely severed ties with him, and he was removed his name from their establishments. And in 2019, Batali reached a settlement with the New York Attorney General's office over allegations of sexual harassment and discrimination. This settlement involved paying a sum of money to the victims and implementing additional measures to prevent future misconduct in his restaurants. And I would say he is one of the few men that I feel was actually canceled. Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, he was actually canceled, though I just did a news search of him and it says that he has been listed as of January 2023 as an investor of a Michigan bakery. This
okay, so
is a case.
I have intel on this.
This is a case for Ms. Cott.
As a Michigan representative, official to Too Niche. So pre-Batali scandal, his whole deal, he's like super into Northern Michigan and he had a property in Northern Michigan. He's like one of our, at the time, he was like one of the celebs who like knew the tea about how amazing Northern Michigan was. He famously was like, I'm never going to open a restaurant here because this is like my special spot and I don't want it to have anything to do with work and all of that. Cut to now, this makes sense.
Yeah. Now he has to go back to the drawing board, start fresh, and start working again, I suppose. So, yeah, he is now an investor in Common Good Bakery, a 2-location business located in Traverse City, Michigan.
Funnily enough, Vogue did an article a few weeks ago about how Northern Michigan is like the new place to summer.
Yeah. The jig's up.
Batali.
I don't think I ever went to the Spotted Pig, which I'm kind of sad about because like during my white girl problems era, I was going to New York a lot and like those were the hot restaurants. But even I had heard just through the rumor mill that like he was spotted like fucking women on tables at the restaurant after hours. Like there was security footage of that, and like that he was just like a noted horny rotund gentleman with red hair.
So I watched Batali, The Fall of a Superstar Chef, so no one else had to. And there was a special room at the Spotted Pig where there was a lot of sucking and fucking going on, and a hidden cocaine stash, and wow, people were smoking weed. It was a whole party scene up there, and Batali was sort of like setting the tone for such behavior.
You know whose opinion I would really, really love to get on this whole scandal?
Who?
Gwyneth's.
I would love.
I would love
they
to
had
talk
their show
offline.
Together.
I know. They were good friends.
They really like co-branded.
And I need to know what the deal is, like what she thinks of him. Are they still in touch? Like what's happening?
My guess is she dropped him like a bad habit.
Yeah. You can't be like a one of the people that really spearheaded the Me Too movement and also be friends with sex pest Mauro Batali.
Right.
Bad for biz.
Wow. That one was sad to me. I was like a huge Food Network fiend growing up. And I, if Batali was, you know, affiliated with a restaurant, I would go.
Yeah.
Like I think I've been to, went to all of his restaurants in New York. I was a love the Bastianich family. Like I was really in.
Hugely and in.
Although not surprising, disappointing.
Very disappointing. As like a massive Italy fan, I'm glad that they cut ties, because I would still be going to Italy even if they didn't, but I can feel a little bit better about it now that it's like there's a separation.
To be so messy, it just speaks to sort of like the allowing that occurs for men in power, even if you're, sorry, disgusting. He was just a name and he had products on shelves and business partners, and everybody sort of turned a blind eye and just like let him terrorize people.
Yeah. And in industries like the restaurant industry or like in Hollywood, which are not your typical, they don't adhere to like corporate norms or codes of conduct. Part of the allure, I think, about getting big in either of those industries is like once you reach a certain level, there are no rules anymore. And I think that is like a perfect breeding ground for like abuse and harassment, because you know that you can get away with it on some level. But if you're smart and you don't get too big for your britches, you can still like do coke and like fucking suck and also not get canceled. That's the and, like, great news is that you can do all those things still, but you just don't
just
have
to
like
be
hurt
consensual.
Anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the best of both worlds.
Love it.
Yeah. But
what a haul.
What a haul.
You really went on a journey.
Mm-hmm.
We took an idea and we said, you know what?
We're hauling it.
Let's see where this can take us. As I said, we'll provide some reference articles if anyone cares to take a deeper look into said restaurant drama.
We'll link it
in
the description. Yeah. And you can read and weep on your own. Guys, until next time, stay niche.
Stay niche. Bye.
Bye.
Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shainhalls and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you love today's episode, please give us a 5-star A+ rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at this_is_too_niche.
One of my favorite big ticket investment items is from Higher Dose. From infrared sauna blankets to PEMF mats, their science-backed tech helps you sweat and recharge and glow like never before. I am such a fan. I truly lie on my PEMF mat every night. I also love my sauna blanket. They are just incredible items. And because you're a Too Niche listener, you get 15% off your order with code NICHE15 at checkout. So head over to higherdose.com, use code NICHE15, and elevate your wellness routine today.